sanding. While we're at it, let's talk about sanders. Famously, woodworkers hate sanding more than any other activity in the shop, but I often love this process, apparently because I am dumb. Sure, it can get super monotonous, at which time it's important to be good at meditating or at least whistling, but it's during the sanding that a project often goes from good-looking to gorgeous. Especially when you're close to done and you wet the wood to raise the grain before final sanding. You've removed all the machining and tool marks, and you get to see the saturated color and figure for the first time. It's one of the most magical moments in working with wood. A belt sander is great for aggressive work, like knocking down the hills on a slab you're trying to flatten, or relying on the flat plate or platen of the sander to sand all the parts on the face of a chest of drawers flush. Many consider this sacrilegious, but if it works, then I say it's fair game. Besides, I learned that trick from a Christian Bexfort article, so if it's good enough for the modern master of the shaker style, it's plenty fine for me. Finish sanders have become very effective in my lifetime with the advent of the random orbit sander. By working your way up through the grits from coarse to fine, a really nice finish can be achieved in a comparably short time. If you think sanding is boring today, imagine how tedious it must have been 40 years ago when sanders just vibrated. The hook-and-loop sanding disc system has also made changing grits a breeze, saving a lot of the fuss that using sanding sheets used to require. Stereo. It's no secret that one of my favorite reasons for being in the shop is that I get to listen to my favorite music as loud as I please, because my name is on the sign. Of course, I don't get too loud, so the neighbors don't run me out of town. Our stereo is a most prized tool. It hooks into any number of sources, like iPods and tablets and laptops, and the volume can be controlled separately in the shop side and in the finishing/slab storage room. In proper shop parlance, it's pretty bitchin'. Hand tools. If I were starting a woodworking practice from scratch today, I'd like to think that I would start small and quiet, like Vic Tesselin suggests in his nifty book, The Minimalist Woodworker. But knowing me, I would not resist the siren song of the machines for too long. Like my heroic pal Jimmy DiResta, I'm too enamored of the ability to make anything I want to, usually by more than one method. I have had just as much fun shaping parts with a bandsaw as with a draw knife. And usually I just determine which method or tool sequence will give me the best result in a fashion that my budget would consider timely. Building for a client places different needs and pressures upon your practice than building for pleasure, and the secret to my own happiness is ensuring that even when working on commissions, the pleasure is retained. It's easy to drop a king's ransom on finely crafted hand tools, but you can also find some great deals on secondhand implements, especially if you pay attention to local garage sales and thrift stores. There are also a great many books to educate you about the hand tools I'll list here, but if you can, get to Lee Nielsen Toolworks in Maine and see if Deneb is available to tell you about their wares in person. I have gone in there looking for a dial caliper and walked out with a couple of spoke shaves and a sharpening jig. He's a very enthusiastic user of their handsome tool line, enabling him to sincerely lionize the integrity of each item. But it's watching his dinner plate hands handle a plane blade that really seals the deal. Damn, now I want to go back. Lee Nielsen and Lee Valley Veritas have generally been considered the finest purveyors of high-quality hand tools in my years of experience, and with good reason. But I'm delighted that now there are many smaller artisanal operations springing up all over the globe, as traditional woodworking reestablishes its hold on our psyches. Chisels. When friends come to visit my shop, I show them a Japanese bench chisel, tipped by its razor-sharp wedge of steel, then I proceed to explain how every operation with every tool in the shop is basically employing some version of that chisel. A table saw utilizes a few dozen little chisels on a spinning wheel. A plane or spokeshave is really just a wide chisel in a clever rigid frame for specialized cutting and shaving. Even sandpaper is made of thousands of tiny chisel-edged grains that are shaving minuscule amounts of wood away. It's all about the chisel and how to apply its edge to wood to achieve your desired purpose. If you can afford only one really nice chisel, shell out for a half-inch or a three-quarter-inch bench chisel and learn to properly sharpen it. Once you've experienced the power that a sharp chisel affords the woodworker, kid, you will be hooked. Whether you're paring a fine shaving from a tenon's cheek, bevel up, or gouging out a large waste area on a canoe paddle, bevel down, the chisel is your best buddy, good buddy. You will frequently require a means by which to persuade your chisel through the wood fibers with some force, a chore which traditionally falls to the mallet. My favorite is one I turned from Lignum Vitae, which serves me well from the lighter tapping up through the more fulsome whopping. When chopping large mortises in timber framing or some of my more massive trestle table bases, I'll use a big framing chisel with an actual steel hammer. Planes. Planes are a gas. A plane is basically a blade held securely at an angle in a sled of some sort. It is adjustable, which allows the user to take a very controlled shaving. The first time I saw the magic of a plane in use, I had just arrived in Los Angeles and I was renting space in my pal Christopher Kelly's shop. I was working away on some custom drawer units for a client's closet, while Chris was finishing up a long, low shelf unit commission in oak for a Tony Silver Lake living room. He grunted as he noticed a few faint tool marks in the front edge of the top shelf, whipped a strange apparatus out of his apron, and much to my surprise, zipped a continuous 64th-inch shaving squarely off the front of the board. "Whoa," said I, "that was scary." He held up the tool and the curled shaving. "Block plane." "Got it," I replied, turning my head quickly to conceal my tears of terror and relief. The more skilled we slowly become at Offerman Woodshop, the more we seem to revert to the use of planes. They come in all shapes and sizes to remove wood from your material in a variety of profiles and finishes. I most regularly reach for my shoulder planes, my block plane, and a number 4 smoothing plane. The engineering in these sweethearts goes back for centuries and has changed very little, which makes them fascinating and powerful to me. In Japan, woodworkers are considered masters once they can shave an entire timber with a large plane, producing an unbroken shaving that is no thicker than the meniscus inside a hard-boiled egg. YouTube it. It's crazy. You can skip the woodworking and make an entire career of collecting planes, tuning them up, and mastering their use, and I wouldn't blame you.